I have the next one. Okay. Yeah, here. Kathleen asks, fuck, marry, kill Paddington, Gerbert, Larry the cucumber.
Oh my lord. I mean, I don't want to sexualize any of these people. Gerbert gets the death penalty for sure, though.
He's a child.
I know, it's sad, but this is the situation we're in. I don't want to kill any of these things. A cucumber, like an orange boy, and, you know, the kindest, you know, incarnation of love in a fictional context. I mean, oh gosh, yeah, some Gerber gets the electric chair. Yeah, no, specifically.
I like how you're making it like graphic.
Yeah, that's right. No, Gerber gets the lethal injection on the chair.
Really quickly, like, how do you kill Carmen?
How do I kill Carmen? I give him what he wants and I send him to hell. I give him a one-way ticket. That's where he wants to go so badly. And he doesn't even know it. But it's right there. And then I guess I'm making love to Larry because I'm going to marry Paddington and live a good long life together with him.
Fuck, marry, kill, Succession, West Wing, Big Little Lies.
Oh my gosh, a lot of FMKs in this one. A lot of...
Yeah, there were a lot of, like, there are a lot of them that I kind of had to whittle down.
I'm killing Big Little Lies. I don't care about that show. I mean... It's a fun pretense for hanging out or having a nice little theme party and watching white ladies drink wine and then having white ladies over to drink wine with as well. But I don't care about that show in any significant way. I'm making like rough, graphic, raw love to Succession. And I will marry the West Wing because that's the girl that brought me to the dance. And I gotta stick with her.
That's beautiful.
Thank you.
That is very beautiful. Okay, these are my questions. Favorite Gilmore's Guys drop?
Woo! Favorite Gilmore Guys drop. I mean, I gotta go with Demi's original Try a Plum. They're Better Than Sex. That was the first time we, like, realized that, oh, we can, like, lean into a very disgusting FM DJ aesthetic if we want to on this otherwise pleasant podcast. And that really opened up the floodgates for us to... turn it into a different kind of show.
Favorite Good Christian Fun drop?
It's all about jacking off. And that's also my favorite drop from Caroline. So I'll go with that. It's a pure distillation of who she is as a person. No context necessary.
Which Gilmore Girls character would be the biggest CRJ stan?
I think Lane. Lane would, like, combat because she would understand, like, I think Lorelai and Rory would have, like, oh, isn't she just a one-hit wonder kind of snobbery towards her at first? And then Lane would be like, no. Clearly you haven't listened to emotion. Clearly you haven't listened to, you know, the early stuff. Like, so I feel like Lane would push through the stuff that a lot of people get ensnared in. And Lane would cut to the feeling, I think.
I would say what's his name? Logan, because he loves like crawling through windows. Finally, should we start the episode?
That's my rapid fire. I'm going to say, yes, we should.
Let's start the episode. Click.
Remember that record that you bought me like 2 years ago? Well, I just remember that it's sitting in the closet. So I called you up just to tell you I've been meaning to listen to it. I've been meaning to listen to it. Why don't you come over and talk about it? About it.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to I've been meaning to listen to that. The podcast where we go through albums we've been meaning to listen to and use it as a conduit to learn about each other and our guests. Wow. Really quickly, like, welcome to Carly Rae Japril, the month of April where we... The month dedicated to the queen of the wholesome horny bop, Carly Rae Jepsen. And I just want to say, I just want to say real quick that like we really messed up by not having Carly Mae Jepsen. Like, but two more competent hosts would come up with that. But we're not going to change it. We're riding through this. Okay. So let's take this time to introduce our very, very, very special guest.
Hell yeah.
You might know him from Gilmore Guys and the subsequent spin-off podcast Bunhead Bros, The Marvelous Miss Maisel Men, The Entourage Entourage, and Maisel Goys. You also might know him as the co-host of the Good Christian Fun podcast on HeadGum, and you might know him as the biggest Paddington stan you'll ever know. It's Kevin T. Porter!
Hey, welcome to me. What a great intro. Thank you so much, friends.
Hi, Kevin.
Thrilled to be here.
We're friends.
We're thrilled to have you
we
here,
did
honestly.
It.
You're our first verified guest.
Yeah.
It's all about
those
the blue check mark, baby.
I'm just kidding. Don't, like, cut that out, please.
Does it become, like, an unreturnable threshold now that you will no longer be able to have anyone on that is not verified?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah,
we're important.
I mean,
now.
Next episode we're having Shane Gillis on, but like we'll see what happens with that.
Oh,
stop making that joke.
That is, you actually hate to see it and hate to hear it. Unforge.
Hey, he needs work. He needs a job. Like he needs
to talk to his mom. Is my take on it. He needs all those things. He needs a support system that lets him know that he doesn't have to be like that.
Oh, what a very. This is very compassionate.
Is that too compassionate?
That's
very unexpectedly
sincere.
Compassionate. Yeah. We love you, Shane. Come on the show.
No.
So, okay. Once again, thank you so much, Kevin. I've been a huge fan of Gilmore Guys and Good Christian Fun for like about 2 years now, like so much so that like it was a really special thing to witness like you and Demi and you and Caroline, like two normal folks, just like make something special. And like I think your show and Good Christian Fun, like Gilmore Guys, Good Christian Fun, like kind of like helped me kind of pull the trigger in terms of like starting this show, because before that, like it felt like, you know, it was like a little more popular if you like your Mark Marons and your Scott Aukermans and like stuff like that. People who are like a little, felt like a little more bred to do so and like a little more experienced. But at the time you and Demi and were just like two regular folks, just like wanting to make something cool and wanting to make something special. And like, so like that, like really like made it feel very possible to like do this show and like, make something special with my friend. It's like, thank you so much for that. Like, it's like really, and it is like a very, it is very surreal and very cool to like have you on. So thank you for joining us to talk about Carly.
Oh, that's very sweet. Thank you so much for saying that stuff. I do like to receive that compliment as like, you know, people who started shows before and maybe had more of a connection or an adjacent career, that's one thing. But then to see two completely unqualified people somehow succeed or thrive in any minuscule way is, I'm happy to be that inspiration.
Yeah.
In that sense.
Yeah. So to those who are not as familiar with Good Christian Fun, could you tell the audience like what the show is and like what it's about and what the aim of the show is?
Sure. So it's a podcast where we talk about Christian evangelical pop culture. So things like Christian music and movies and entertainment and stuff that Christians make for a Christian audience, which is its own bizarre little weird upside down subculture of regular pop culture. There's Christian equivalents to secular bands. So if you like Counting Crows, you might like Third Day. If you like NWA, you might like DC Talk. Well, actually, that's probably not true, but things like that. And so we have people on to talk about that weird, wild stuff and also talk about their own experience and relationship with faith, while not trying to make anybody go to church or to proselytize to them or to bash their beliefs either, but just to have fun and talk about and process faith stuff from a safe distance. Mm-hmm.
And like that seems like a very like specific and tricky needle to thread of like not proselytizing, not like, but also like not like bashing other people's beliefs, but also like respecting people's like experiences with that, their trauma, and like being very respectful while also like being a comedy show. So like I was wondering like how do you like approach that like every week of just like that balance in a sense?
Well, you know, I mean, everyone has different philosophies of this stuff, and I do still think of it as foremost a comedy show, but I think of it in that sense of like comedy as a vehicle for delivering other stuff and delivering whatever is the substance of the conversation or whatever perspective or message that we have. In the same way that like when you have a conversation with a friend of yours, you don't think of it primarily as like, well, I'm about to have like a comedy conversation, but there is like moments where you laugh and you make jokes or make fun of each other as a part of that just like long-term relationship and knowing each other, getting to know each other, or even like on a date or something. So I view the comedy as just like, as like almost like a different species of hospitality to use in those moments to make people feel safe, to make people feel disarmed and comfortable in a good way. So they can talk about like the things that are actually on their hearts, and then maybe using comedy as a way of like as a destination of process as well as a method of process. So, you know, when you're laughing at something, you can't be afraid at the same time. So if there's a way to have a perspective about whatever ideas you had about the universe or what you thought God was or what you think God is now, if you can do that while laughing at the same time, then it's not harmful and it's not hateful and it's not primarily toxic or hurtful to yourself or to other people. So I think that's kind of a, you know, highfalutin foo-foo way to put it, but I feel like that is sort of a goal of the show, even when it's not consciously stated as such.
Yeah. And like, I think you guys do a really good job of like, because you two, you and Caroline come from faith backgrounds and like have like a very strong familiarity with that. But like, but also like, again, taking care of your guests and being very hospitable and empathetic towards them. And like, also like extracting the good that could be taken out of like someone like a Carmen or like Kanye or like something like that. And like, I really enjoyed your, I've been thinking about this a lot of like how your Kanye episode, just like, I was kind of like a little hesitant to listen to it because it was like, not that I'm like a super huge Kanye head, but like that intersection of like, you know, race and like mental health and his bipolar disorder and then, you know, faith and all that stuff. And like, you like the way you like researched all that stuff, the way you like kind of prepared for that and made sure to be thoughtful and like considerate about that subject matter, like when it comes to like faith, when it comes to like mental illness, but also like making it like very funny, like I love the Sistine Chapel, like stuff like that. Like it's like it is like a really like I don't think there are a lot of shows. It's a very like it's like it's hard to like recommend the show to people because it's a very specific, again, it's like a very, very niche thing. But it also like because it's so niche, that's why it really resonates with me. And that's why it like really is like particularly hilarious and particularly like edifying to listen to. So like thank you so much.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. Thank you for saying that.
Okay. So one more question before we get into Carly. And this is to Ezra too. this is the most I've prepared for any interview or like any guest. So hey, like,
what an honor to not be phoned in on the interview. Like your other unverified guest.
get a blue check mark and we'll talk. And this to Ezra too, like, how has being raised Christian impacted the way you currently consume music and or media?
Well, I think it's made me not a snob about some stuff in a good way, because in revisiting some contemporary Christian music in my adult life, even feeling that I have some semblance of like taste or a palate or something like that, I feel like I can thoughtfully say, hopefully I can thoughtfully say like, oh, this is good or this is bad. And it doesn't have to be exactly this certain kind of thing or that certain kind of thing. So I feel like hopefully it's made me not a snob with that stuff. And then also, I think it's just given me a deeper sense of appreciation, because we were raised on so much that was just Christian music or gospel adjacent. So anything else felt so abnormal. And even now in my adult life, it feels like, oh, wow, this is new and exciting, even though.
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah, I definitely feel that.
It still feels new and exciting, even as an adult, because it's still somewhat feels like an aberration of like base or home. So like if base or home is like, you know, Christian music, that's base or home. And so everything else just feels a little bit richer in that sense.
I feel like I relate a lot to that, like just kind of feeling like the music is a little bit like richer and like feeling like it's something new to me, even though like I am a little bit further removed from that now. Just because when I was growing up, I've talked about this on the podcast before, it's like just been country and Christian music. And so like breaking out of that into like the broader world of music was definitely like an enriching experience. And then I'd say it's also impacted me because I tend to like be really like hyper focused on like the vocals and the lyrics of a song. So like that's why some music is a little bit harder for me to get into, like certain types of like punk or things like that, because like they focus and like metal and stuff like that too, because they focus a lot more on like the music than they do on like what they're actually trying to say with the song. And like I think that was kind of a value to me, just because I was always looking to make sure that like a song was Christian enough to listen to when I was a kid, and that like like saying things that I didn't believe in. And now I'm like a little bit more forgiving on it, but I'm still like very tuned into what's going on.
Yeah, I feel like being raised with a lot of that stuff gives oftentimes almost as a reaction against it, and just like taking things wholesale, it gives you a little bit of discernment for other stuff.
Absolutely.
So you're always kind of like trying to evaluate stuff on its own merit, but then also trying to tune into like, oh, what's the core of this actually saying? And what is the,
right.
So it's like the net result of a lot of our upbringing is that we became more vigilant about this stuff that we were, you know, because that was a big theme impressed upon us, is like, you know, what goes in must come out, and like be mindful and be wise about what you're consuming, which was kind of given to us in really probably black and white binary or didactic ways. But I do find still a lot of truth in that idea of just always know what it is that you're processing or consuming, because some things, like, you know, like it's pretty easy to internalize ideas of racism or ideas of misogyny or ideas that are like seem subtle or seem harmless, or even like certain media that seems harmless but actually does affect worldview in a mostly negative way. So I feel like I definitely have that or I try to practice that gift now, at least.
Well, yeah, and I think that it can kind of foster a certain amount of like self-hate with some music too. And so I think that like you need to be careful about like what you take in to some extent. Like, definitely don't make it like a black or white issue, but like there's nothing wrong with being a little bit more discerning about it and like making sure that you're not reinforcing ideas that are ultimately harmful to you or the world around you.
Yeah, totally. I can't just listen to like. It does feel like a little bit like of a disease, but like I can't just like listen to something to enjoy it anymore. I have to like think about the implications of like this like supports this, and like what is this actually saying, and like it's
a blessing and a curse.
It also like leads to like a certain amount of like like a level of paranoia too. Like I remember when, I think I told Ezra this, but like I remember when I was a kid, that like I remember when I was a kid, I saw a church play where like the sinner character was like breakdancing. And I thought that was like, he was like breakdancing to like rap music. And I thought it was like so cool. And like, I was like my 6-year-old self, like a few days later, like try to do that in my room. And then my parents walked in and I started crying. And I was like, and they're like, what? They were like amused. Like, what's wrong? Why are you crying? It's cute, whatever. And then like, I was like, I was doing the sitter dance. I was like, and like, but like the idea of just like, other side of it too, is just like that fear, all like that. I cannot just like enjoy things anymore. Maybe that's good. Maybe that's a good thing, but like, it applies to a lot of things like with Christianity, for better, for worse. Like, it has like made me like kind of like hold back and like kind of like diminish myself to a degree. But at the same time, it has made me very careful. It has made me very cognizant and hyper aware of what I'm consuming and what they're saying and all that stuff.
Totally.
So speaking of all of that, I don't know. Like that's not a transition.
A flawless segue.
Yeah, yeah. I appreciate validation from a pro like you. let's talk about Carly Rae Jepsen. Like, what are your preconceived notions about Carly, and how did you get into her?
Carly Rae Jepsen.
Well, you know, I was swept up in Call Me Maybe fever in 2012.
Really?
Like all of us were. Yeah. I always thought it was a bop, but you know, I didn't have any curiosity to get more into that particular album, to get into, what's it called? Kiss. That's
Kiss,
the name,
yeah,
of the album. So I didn't have any desire to get into that. But I think when I saw how much people were going gaga over Emotion on Twitter back in 2015, when it came out, it was enough for me to at least want to check it out. And, you know, and again, try not to be a snob about any of the genres, and like good music can come from anywhere. I have this very distinct memory of walking around Washington, D.C. I was there for work at the time, and just walking around it and listening to Emotion for the first time and listening to Boy Problems over and over again on repeat, mm-hmm, and like getting into that album in that specific city at that specific time in my life. I'll always associate that with that stuff. So, which is not true of every album. Mostly it's just like, yeah, I was driving around LA and I put it on in the car, but like, that was like a very specific time in my life. And then after that, I really had no choice but to stand and to, you know, and I'm not like in the deep dive sense of like, I know, okay, and then she dated this guy in 2016 and she worked with this producer, but just like to stand in the old traditional sense of like, listen to her music all the time and a lot. And so Dedicated was a very much anticipated album for me for this year.
Can I just point out the phrase, stan in the old traditional sense?
Yes. Oh, to stan as they used to stan in the 1800s. Well, I stan Charlie Chaplin at the old talkies, and at the movies, we stan. We have no choice but to stan Buster Keaton. Or Mozart. We have no choice but to stan.
So, with Dedicated, like, what were you kind of like with that record? Like, what were your expectations with it? What were you kind of like wanting it to be? What were you anticipating it to be?
I was just hoping that she wouldn't regress at all, and that she would at least maintain the kind of like European disco-y production vibes and pop sensibilities of Emotion, maybe further along some of that stuff, but I didn't want like a more modern Carly. I didn't want 2019 Carly. I wanted whoever Carly was in 2019, but I didn't want it to sound like that in particular. So, you know, Like, unfortunately, it's like that classic, like, more the same, but still surprise me at the same time. I feel like that was a healthy part of my expectation for that stuff.
So, what about you, Ezra? What were your expectations like going into this record?
Yeah, so this was definitely the one that I was a little bit more excited about, just because I didn't get into like Carly back in the day. Kind of aside from Call Me Maybe, I didn't really listen to her until this year, and it's because of you, Andrew, like being such a fan now. And I like you had put one of her songs on our playlist, and so I listened to that and really loved it, and specifically Everything He Needs. Since that's from this album, like I was kind of expecting more of that and like got really excited about it because I like the sound of that song a lot. But then I don't know, like after kind of diving into Emotion for the last episode, like I don't know. I don't know that like my opinion of it changed as much, but like I kind of felt where some of these like things started and like the kind of seeds that she planted of like the synth pop stuff. And so I yeah, I don't know. I looked forward to this a lot is what I'm trying to say, basically.
Great.
Like A plus quotes.
It's good. Or whatever you said.
Yeah, shut the fuck up. I can say that a song is good and just leave it at that, okay? That's all our show should be, is just saying,
I'm just
this
saying
song's
in our
good,
music
moving on.
Criticism podcast, like, okay. Like,
guys, should I leave? Like, I want you guys to thrive and work this out. I feel like I'm getting in the way.
No, please, please stay. As for me, I think, like, my obsession and love and stanitude for Carly is like very well documented at this point.
Yes.
I think like it's like just like to quickly go over it for Kevin. I saw this Call Me Maybe Girl. I thought the song was cute, but like didn't really think too much of it. Then people on Facebook like started to like, you know, talk about like Emotion and how great it was, and like also listening to Gilmore Guys a little bit, like, and you talking about it a little bit, kind of like, oh, a person, oh, wow, like, a person, like, I think is cool, like, likes this record. Maybe I'll check it out later. But, like, it wasn't, like, a priority. And, like, listening to it initially, I was like, I kind of dismissed it as, like, bland and, like, not for me. Like, I like Boy Problems, but, like, I didn't really, like, resonate with it. But then, like, a few years later, it just, like, hit me, like, hard. And like, I really got everything she was talking about. She has a great, her skill, I feel, is she's able to find, like, I feel like she has like this great, like, command of like songcraft and songwriting that she can like get to the essence of the feeling in just like very small verses or a chorus or something along those lines. And like, I was going through.
Do you think that like, listening back to the album and like enjoying it a lot more like the second time around and it like hitting you, that's just kind of like a right place, right time type of thing?
Yeah, absolutely. It is a right place, right time thing of just like, I was going through, like, I think, so like talk about this record in particular, when I was like kind of like playing through Emotion and I was like, it was getting to a point where it was a little played out. I was still really liking it a lot. Like, I was like, I listened to it so many times that like it really, like, I was like itching for like new stuff. And then like Party for One came out, and during that time I was like, 2 years ago, like, I fell in love with this girl, and like 2 years later we kind of like stopped talking to each other, kind of like went our separate ways. And then like I was still, even 2 years later, I was still like kind of dealing with the aftermath of that, still dealing with the pain. And just like, I felt guilty because like I didn't, like, I felt bad that I was still feeling bad even though so much time has passed, even though like you know, the world's kind of like moved on in a sense. I was still like in this headspace. And then just like hearing Carly sing like in Party for One, just like the like, I'm not over it, but I'm trying. And it's just, I just like, it was the rejuvenation that I needed. It was like, it was that solidarity. It was that, and like, I just like listened to that song on repeat, like all the time for like a very long time. And like, I was heavily anticipating this record to the point where like, where the other singles came out, I started like to make theories of like, what is this song? Like, how is this song lead into this song? Cause like, we like had like little, like we had like, there are like three or four songs out at the, like, what is she trying to tell with this story here? And like, I was like very, I feel like the rollout was a little clumsy and a little prolonged in terms of like, Party for One came out in November. Then in March, 4 months later, like two new songs came out. And then like 2 months later, like the whole record came out. It was just like, it was like a very long, like kind of prolonged layout. But nevertheless, I was still like really excited. Yeah. About it. So like, let's get into themes of this record. Like, what do you feel are the themes Carly is talking about in this record?
I mean, it's life and love and other mysteries. It's relationships, man.
I feel like her entire discography could be described that way.
Yeah, I think it's very base. She's going to be, it looks like she's going to be a songwriter. And if she wants the long career, she can have it and be the kind of person that writes kind of the same song over and over again in some ways, and kind of keeps like refining it and perfecting it and putting it into like new modes and new keys and new verses and choruses. But it's going to kind of be the same one. And like, just that part of opening your heart up to someone else and a sincere desire for love and connection. I feel like that's the main and theme. It might be the only one of the album, unless you two disagree and have a different read of it.
Yeah, I definitely see that. Like, she is kind of talking about a lot of the same things that she talked about on Emotion, but there's like an increased like confidence, and like Andrew mentioned, there's like an increased like sexiness to it as well. She like seems to be generally a lot more happy and like kind of centered in like who she is as a person, and like a lot healthier type of love is coming out of that.
Like, Emotion was a lot of like kind of based around a lot of unmet desire, of like her feeling very strongly about this person, yet those feelings not being reciprocated. And with this record, it's like finally a lot of these songs are still about desire, about the wanting, about the lead up to the thing. But like, it's like now in this record, it's like closer than ever. It's within her grasp. And, it's like really wonderful to see. It's like really aspirational in a lot of ways for me personally. Like, it's like I feel like and like very like what's it called? Like, I really, really relate to that, of like, I know myself to be a person with so much love to give, so much like affection to give if like someone wants it. But like, like, it's like this record's called Dedicated, but like, it's kind of not really about that. It's not really about like a long-term relationship necessarily. It's kind of like more like Ezra was saying, like some of the songs are the exact same emotional territory as Emotion, like literally, like where like some of these songs on Dedicate could be dropped into Emotion and just like no one would really know, of like maybe like Happy Not Knowing, or like maybe Julian, even though Julian kind of sounds a little different. But like, some, it's like kind of that same thematic territory of like being haunted, unmet desire, just like relationship confusion, all that stuff. But then with this record, it's like very much like the other thread is like the a breakup with like one of her current boyfriends, like kind of the dissolution of one of her current relationships. And then at the same time, new love. you know, like she's found new love and is getting the reciprocation she needs and deserves. And like, those are the three threads within the record. And to me, like, it feels a little disconnected. It doesn't, the sequencing to me is a little like strange of like how, like, cause like they're kind of like following three different threads at the same time. Like a sitcom, like, kind of has like three subplots at the same time, like, that are kind of all different. But at the same time, I kind of like it in terms of like, that's how life is, of just like how, like, you know, some days you're happy and like horny, and some days you're like very sad and horny.
Yeah, I can attest to that, brother. you're right in that there's a little bit of clunky sequencing too. I think this is about pretty much every album that gets released now. Maybe I'm just old, but you can always, I think, cut at least three songs from every album. I think anything more than 11 tracks or 12 maybe is excessive. I think you're underlining the point too many times.
I think every record should be the length of a Nokia ringtone. And like, I'm good.
Oh, so true. That means every song is like 2 seconds.
Just,
but they're all different ideas, vine length, too. Like,
that's right. And yeah, they work like, together cohesively. That's right.
Yeah, like the process behind this record, like Carly's process is very interesting. Maybe not that interesting, but like Carly's process for like songwriting, she kind of like, she said this many, many times, but like she writes about 200 songs and then whittles it down to 15. And they have like a listening party and like they vote on which songs they like the best. So like, that is why I think like a strength of hers is in terms of quality of like, she has all these ideas, all these wonderful ideas, but then just like whittled down to like the 15 best ones, which is why the quality of the songs are like very high in my opinion. But then the downside is like, they're not very, it's not quite cohesive in a sense. It's like a lot of like, it's like 4 years of her life basically just like kind of like weaving in and out of like different times and different like ideas really, and not really being about dedicate, like the title track of the song is not on this record because it's like about her ex, which is like a very, it's like, so like that's kind of, that to me, like kind of, I would like a better title could have been like Feels Right or something like that. But like,
apparently the working
know.
Title
it's
was
good.
Like music you can clean your house to or something like that, which I feel like is very fitting because listening to it like, and just kind of letting the music wash over me, like I want to get up and like do things, like it makes me restless because it's so like poppy and upbeat and like has kind of funk elements to it. Like,
yeah, wasn't it going to be more fully disco too in her original conception of it, and then she kind of pulled back on it?
I think
that was,
so
that was
yeah.
what I was reading in interviews.
Yeah, she like was like very she wanted to make a disco record, which would have been cool, by the way. Like, I think she like works well in that genre, but like she found herself being pulled, like her like kind of writing team, like kind of like she found that to be too limiting ultimately. And so she like kind of wanted to go back to some of the 80s pop and emotion and like explore some 90s stuff. And like, also like there's some like very 2012-y, you know, modern, you know, fist pumping, help, I'm having a stroke, I'm devolving. Like, yeah, it's just like, so that's like the, that's like a, I guess we could get like, we could go into lowlights right after this break. Dot, 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 dot. And we're back here to talk about
Dedicated.
three friends. Dedicated by Carly Rae Jepsen. Let's go into like lowlights. What do you feel like are songs or even just general ideas that like are like kind of the lowlights for you?
I think like I was saying about my preconceived expectations that I don't like it whenever it sounds too 2019 or 2018 pop, like late aughts pop, when it gets into sort of like, yeah, XCX or Eilish territory in terms of, oh, this beat is going to sound dated in X amount of years, or even like some of the recent Taylor stuff, which I think happens more in the latter half of the album. Like maybe the sound gets into that, maybe Automatically in Love or Right Words, Wrong Time. That stuff I feel like I don't need on the album.
Sometimes that, like, what's it called? Real Love and Now That I Found You. I feel like I like those songs a lot. I think I really enjoy those songs, but it's like when it kind of goes into the or like the it already sounds dated. Like, I think she executes it pretty well, but like it does sound like, you're right that like in a few years it's gonna sound even more dated, and it doesn't play to her strengths of like using retro elements but also feeling modern at the same time, but also feeling somewhat timeless. Like, she doesn't rely on just like doing an 80s tribute. Like, she kind of like takes some elements of that and incorporates it into the stuff she's interested in. But yeah, I feel like that's a weak element.
Yeah, I definitely agree with Kevin that it's like stronger at the beginning of the album, and then it kind of like devolves in its sound a little bit, and like a lot of the stuff ends up sounding very similar to each other too. There aren't like really as many like standout songs towards the end, and that's kind of a shame.
I also think Party for One is like a strange sequencing to put that as the last
one. Yeah, I don't think that it fits on the album. Like, I think it was a good single, but
it was like a bonus track. Like, technically Real Love is the last song for sure, and Party for One are the two bonus tracks. But yeah, like Real Love I think is a decent ending. It is a little cliche, just like the idea of, but like the thing I think Carly, like, it's more about the execution than like a new original idea of like kind of delving into like the depths of humanity, really.
Well, yeah,
it's like, just more about like the execution of, like, yeah,
people have said about her before that, like, I don't remember where I read it, but she, like, her music is kind of meant to be felt more than it's meant to be like thought about deeply in like the words and stuff, and I definitely feel that when I do kind of like try to break it down a little bit more, like, because she has a lot of very cliched ideas and like repetition and things like that, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, it's just her style.
Yeah, and she's an interesting artist in that I think we expect a lot of vulnerability and candor from artists about like what's going on in their personal life, and everyone loves being like a little Twitter detective about like, well, this lyric means this about this boy, and this lyric means this about she went to Italy and then she met this producer, so like, and and really the truth of it is she is like an artist in the way of, I mean, she is an artist, but she is a craftsman more, it feels like, where she's like building songs for people's listening pleasure, less so than like the full autobiography, autofictional stuff that like a Beyonce or a Taylor will do, where it is like, okay, this one's John Mayer, this one's Harry Styles, this is about Scooter Braun, this is about Kanye, and like, there's not that one-for-one autobiography to read in her stuff. She is literally just like making tables for us. She's not like monetizing her own emotional. I mean, she is, and that like everybody is, and like everyone puts a little bit of their own.
Well, yeah, she'll take like elements of her life, but she doesn't make one song specifically about this person. Like, even the song Julian, like, it has a person's name as the title, and I guess she took that from her own experience, but the song's not about that person, which is weird, but and like, that completely makes sense with the, like, with her songwriting process too, like the fact that she stockpiles so many songs and then just picks out the best ones, because if you are writing that many songs, you cannot come up with like 200 like really solid good ideas that are vulnerable and like cogent points, I guess.
For sure. Which, you know, and I'm happy about, like, I like people who just like, okay, I'm going to write down it. Like, I feel like there's artists where the, it definitely comes more from a wellspring of, I have something that I am dying to tell you. And there's like this thing happening inside of me internally that I must externalize or I'm going to go crazy. And then there's people where it's like, this is the position and these are my giftings that I have. And so I do want to share my giftings with you, but I don't want you to mistake it for like, I'm like your buddy, like writing you a letter or a text or something in the middle of the night.
I think we kind of like expect too much of artists at this point because of like other artists who will be like a little bit more vulnerable. Like, I think both styles are fine, but like, I think that we need to stop pushing like that kind of like vulnerability, like more like writing their heart out style. Like, we need to stop pushing that on people who are more like craftsmen.
Yeah. Which, I mean, this has always been the case where there is like, how does this compare to this in the real life? And how is this song actually about this? And okay, you know, like this probably happened with bands before. And obviously like the Beatles, you can track like even stuff going as far back in like pop is that, but I do wonder if this is just like an unfortunate, slightly dystopian byproduct of like internet culture and like the endlessly monetizable self that we do sort of crave that from artists and people. And when we like of a certain level, and when we don't get it, we feel short shifted or like cheapened on our end of the bargain. And maybe, again, it's like an old school sensibility, but I'm fine with like my pop stars being more like in some ways what she is, which is like an empty cipher for whatever the reception of the message would be.
Yeah. The strength of, like I mentioned this last episode, the strength of her music is you could put yourself in it. You could like say, oh, that's me. Just like, you know, like. That's the value of like putting yourself in it is the, I think the function she provides.
Absolutely.
Yeah. On the other side of that too, like the like I don't really have any songs that I like actively dislike. Like, I think they're all good and great. But the criticism that I could see is like, on the flip side of what you're saying of like, not everyone has to like share everything about themselves. Not everyone has to be like super personal. The other side of it is, I feel like sometimes she is a little too she can be a little corporate in a sense of like, you know, her music videos are like, you know, there's like TikTok plugs in there and like car, it's like a car commercial at the same time. And like, just like, Feels Right, the remix of that. Like,
well, at the same time, sorry to interrupt.
Please, please.
At the same time, because of the type of artist she is, I feel like that works okay. Like, because she's not, it's not like she's selling out in any way. She's just, like, making more money on top of, like in a style that she can do it.
Like, I really, and I also, like, understand the conundrum of, like, you know, the corporations will give you money to like, so that you could like fund your music video, like, or whatever like that. I get that function, but like, yeah, there's something a little Black Mirror-y about just like how, you know, she'll like do a Pride remix with like Bud Light. And like I read somewhere online of like, how like Insidious.
Well, that shit annoys me because of rainbow capitalism, not because of anything Carly's doing.
No, but truly, like the idea of like, just like, it's like, it's because like those corporations don't actually care about you. They don't like actually give a shit about you or your life. They just want to sell you something. And it's like pretty insidious in that way. And it feels a little icky that Carly's involved, but like also like, because she's so likable and lovable and stuff, like, yeah, and like how like the idea of like, you know, alcoholism is like very prevalent in like queer communities, and like corporations sometimes will like prey on that. Like, they will like actively, it's like fucked up, it's deeply fucked up. But yeah, we love Carly. We love you, Carly, come on the show.
Hey.
Yeah.
That sounds familiar.
I don't know what you're talking about. I think it's a Demi quote. I don't know. Like, punch up the jam.
Yeah, that's like... right. That's what I mean.
So let's get into highlights. What are some highlights for you guys?
I mean, Too Much. That's like one of my favorite songs of the year.
Ooh.
I like the spare arrangement of it and how moody, and even that felt like a nice progression of, well, don't just do like the 80s synth pop core stuff again, but also progress just a little bit without forgetting that. But even the do chitu 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 chit, like that beat that I feel like is so prevalent in 2019 pop, but it still felt filtered through her sensibilities in a nice way. So I really enjoyed that. And it's just like such a nice central metaphor to hang a song on. That's something, gosh, it's so stupid, but like it's something Springsteen said a long time ago in like a VH1 thing. Is like all you need for your song, like as a starting point, you just need a good central metaphor. So just like whatever that idea is, and then everything else flows out of whatever that metaphor is. So the idea of like the common parlance we have in relationships and friendships, or like when you're getting to know someone, or there might be an exciting new romantic connection, and you're saying like, oh, actually, is this too much? Or like, am I being too much right now? And then like the kind of playfulness by which she's turning that on, I think it's just such an elegant pop sensibility to put that in.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm about to tear up. That was so beautiful. I was like,
oh, wow. The first tears on the podcast.
Like, oh, man. But like, oh, man. Like, that really got, like, as like a chronic overthinker, like, that's a real, not even just romance in particular, just like anything, really. Just like, I worry that, like, I am too much. I worry that, like, I am, like, and like in one of my favorite moments in the concert that we went to was when Carly like kind of prefaced the song like, you know, hey guys, we're all too much, but we all are too much. We're all too much sometimes. We're all too much sometimes. But you know, our too muchness makes us great, and any of those feelings, just give them to me today. And like, that's like really like a really lovely thing.
That is
like
really lovely.
Very sweet.
I personally do feel that a lot too for myself. And like I've been told in like probably those same exact words that I am too much. And like, that's something that like I've kind of lived a lot in, like kind of thinking that I'm a little bit too like intense or like, dramatic or just a lot for people. And like, I have a lot of like mental shit going on, like mental health stuff. And so like people can be kind of shitty about that. And like, because of that, like that is something that like I'm very insecure about. And so like having kind of a song that like voices that really well, like either in a romantic context or not, is like really helpful for me. Like, I'm sure that this will end up being like super overplayed for me because like, I relate a lot to it, and like, it's a fucking bop. Like, it sounds great. Like, for all the reasons that you were saying, Kevin, neither of us are as like musically articulate, but yeah.
I think it's so sweet that it does touch upon a central idea for everybody and like an access point of getting into it, like most great music does. And then also just like the cleverness of it and the turn of phrase where it's like, is this too much? Does speak to insecurity. But then in the song, when she's saying, is this too much? It is like, I know this isn't too much. I'm kind of joking around with you right now. Cause it's like, clearly we're both into it, but I'm still saying it like in a playful way where it's like, is this too much? Of course, the guy's going to be like, nope, it's not too much.
Oh, man. Yeah, it's like that push and pull of like, just like having your basic needs, desires met, but also like actually be like, I think it's very possible to literally be too much for people and like put too much emotional burden on people, but also like having that confidence And like it's so.
Well, yeah, but like pushing too much on people is different than being too much yourself too. And I think that needs to be acknowledged. Yeah. And that's something that like I think is a really hard thing to learn too. Like when you do have a habit of doing that.
Ezra.
Yeah.
That's why you're my best friend.
Should I leave?
I don't know.
So sweet.
You're fine. Highlight for me. Want you in my room. How fun. What a fun time. Like, I love how big it is. I love how, again, just like how confident and like, it's a wholesome, horny bop. It's like, great. It's just like, I really don't have a lot more to say about it. Like, Jack Antonoff produced it. It feels huge. It feels like very, very, very 80s. It's playful. And the only issue I have with it is like a barber that has a 3-star review on Yelp. I have mixed feelings about that fade.
Wow. What a long walk to a great destination.
It was worth it. I learned from the best, baby. I say baby too. Yeah. What are you guys' thoughts on like Want You in My Room?
Yeah, no, it feels like he's just dominant. Antonoff has just dominated so much of the last 2 years of what I've listened to. Pretty undeniable. And it was the one maybe most cast in the mold of emotion stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like pretty flagrant throwback tendency. And you can just kind of see the John Hughes movie that it scored to.
Yeah.
So I thought about it in those terms. And I think it snuck up on me, but I remember the first time listening to it, I'm like, yeah, this is it. Yep. But then I'm surprised that it did become my most listened to Carly song of 2019.
I enjoyed Want You in My Room, but I wouldn't really say that it was necessarily a highlight for me. I do like the production on it a lot, but I, in general, don't really have a lot to say on it.
It's one of her explicitly horniest songs, too. That seems like a different sort of thing.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Especially because of the horniness or the wholesomeness, rather, of Call Me Maybe is just so, like, is so I Want to Hold Your Hand core that then... Her saying I want to do bad things to you does feel like such an interesting contrast.
But I think like that was like something she was trying to articulate in her very unique cutesy way during that era, during Kiss, during Emotion. She was trying to express those like horny emotions, but like also like in a way that like is palatable, in a way that like didn't make her feel like a little like. But, like, I think she's at a point now where she's very, like, even now she's, like, a little, like, you could tell she's, like, a little, she's still, like, kind of figuring out her body. She's still trying to, like, figuring out how to present herself in a little bit. But, like, at this point.
She's a young woman going through a lot of changes, and we need to be respectful of that and honor that.
Yeah. Thanks for stopping me.
Like, you can definitely tell like how she's grown so much in confidence. Like I was saying at the beginning of this, like she is in like a similar place in the feelings that she's having a little bit, but she's like kind of stepping out there a little bit more, and like I think that that's great.
What's a highlight for you, Ezra?
So one highlight for me was I'll Be Your Girl. I kind of like that she like explores a different style a little bit there, like a little bit more indie
different
influence.
Style, and different then emotional texture too.
Different, yeah, that's exactly what I was gonna say. Like different emotions too. Like she doesn't really dive into like kind of anger and jealousy and stuff like that a lot. But like, so like seeing that side of her, it definitely like breaks up the album in an interesting way. Because I'd say that this stands out from like any of the other songs on the album.
I love how I love the line, I'll trade places tonight if you love me like that. Also the line, I pray I'm getting over it. Like,
I think, like, you know, jealousy is a very normal thing. Jealousy, like, everyone feels that at one point in their life. And just, like, I think she's hoping, I like the idea, like, she's hoping that, like, these feelings will ultimately be constructive. These feelings will ultimately, this is, like, a phase she needs to get through to, like, get to, like, a better place, in a sense. I don't know. Yeah, any other highlights from this record? Like, let's just, like, go, let's just barrel through these.
For me, I'd say Julian is another highlight. Like, I think she starts out, like, love really strong Julian. With that. Yeah. and
it's such like, a, like, a almost like a minor kickoff, too, that makes it interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love that you can kind of, like, instantly, like, kind of feel the more, like, disco, like, synth pop style, like her kind of breaking out of what she did before a little bit. I think that it's like so chill and so like different, and I like it.
Gotta concur. I love that. I love Everything He Needs, a little remix of that Shelley Duvall song from the Popeye movie.
Yeah, it's like it asks Nate begs the question, like, what if Olive Oil fucked? Just, no.
I mean, I think we know what would happen, and they do have a son together, don't they?
They have a son? I didn't know this.
I thought Popeye and Olive Oil have a son. I could be wrong about that.
I just love a girl with, like, malleable bone density.
Yeah, and you put that in your profiles, right?
That's right. I'm not having a lot of luck. I don't know why. I apologize for interrupting you, Kevin.
Oh, you good?
So I'm so sorry. Yeah, what do you think? Like, want you in my room?
Everything He Needs.
No, sorry. Everything He Needs. Yeah. It's great. She's kind of like, because she has this reciprocated love, she's exploring she finally gets to live out and explore the potential she knows she has as like this caretaker. And like, it's not, she like, a very understated sexiness too. Just like, you know, again, like it's a, like hold, like she's talking about like holding his hand or whatever like that. It's like, but it's like very like, it's more about the lead up than the actual.
And I think it's cool that itself. Like on this album, she's kind of exploring the idea of like, he needs me, not like necessarily I need him all the time. And I think that speaks a lot to her growth.
And that's women doing it for themselves.
Mm-hmm. Fuck yeah.
20 summer, 2020 by the time this will be out. I don't know.
That's right.
Like, this episode's coming out in April, so like it's hot on the heels. I love Feels Right. It's like such a, I think like that's another sign of growth for her, is like she's able to enjoy the present in terms of like, you're my complicated friend, like you, we're not anything right now. But just like, first of all, the idea of just like having a friend that like you spend a lot of time with and you feel a lot of chemistry with, and like it's just like time passes just very easily, and like you just love each other's company, like very relatable. But then the idea of her being able to just enjoy this without like a lot of emotion is just about like the impending doom of like, I feel great about this, I feel this love towards this person, but then like he doesn't want me, so then ultimately this feeling will like kind of like end, and like I'm gonna there's gonna be a crash at the end. But with this, it's like she's just able to enjoy the present. It's like really beautiful.
Yeah,
that's a lovely way to put it.
Thank you. Thank you, Kevin.
You're welcome.
Hey, Kevin.
Yeah,
I love you.
Oh wow. You too,
do you
bud.
Guys want me to go? Or?
Oh wow. No, I'm not kidding. Yes, please. I do love you, Kevin. I do. This episode of the podcast is sponsored by Diagnosis, an award-winning short film by friend of the podcast, Tanner Richard Kraft. It's about a mother who learns how to evolve as a parent in the face of her son's autism diagnosis. In less than a month of the public release, it has been very well received, with many saying it taps into the very real feelings of frustration or fear they feel adjusting to this diagnosis, either as a parent or an autistic person. I think this is a really wonderful film. I've seen it myself. It has like little touches of Linklater in it, and he has a lot of promise as a filmmaker, and I cannot wait to see what he does next. You can check Diagnosis out on Tanner Richard Kraft's YouTube channel, or check it out in the link in the description. Now back to the show, baby. Bye. Hope the rest of the episode's good. So let's give this our ratings. The way this works is we'll give this rating 1 out of 10, blanks out of 10, like,
You'll pick something like from the album, basically.
Like, we directly stole this from Gilmore, guys.
Yeah, I get it. It feels like a dream I had a long time ago.
I was not part of this.
So we'll, you know how this works. Ezra, how about you, you go first.
Oh God, oh geez. Okay, I did, like, just really love the album. I love that she's kind of stepping into, like, new territory a little bit, but it still feels, like, true to herself. Like, she has kind of a cohesive, like, narrative throughout things. She has a cohesive, like, career narrative, not necessarily, like, from one song to the other. I think that for, like, what she's trying to accomplish, like, she pulls it off really well. I love, like, the disco influence. Like, this is music that, like, I will probably regularly listen to after we're done with this, since I was the only one who hadn't really listened to it.
Yes.
I just thoroughly enjoyed it. I don't really have any major complaints on the album. So, Andrew, you're going to be happy about this. I'll give it 10 out of 10 lighthouses.
What? Wow. What a fun time. Hey, that makes me very happy. Okay, Kevin, we turn to you.
Yeah, I gotta be honest and legitimate about my feelings. So I'm going to say a 7.5 out of 10 freaking bedrooms.
Wow.
Yeah, because, I mean, if emotion is a 9, this is a 7.5 for me. Still super positive, still one of my favorite albums of the year, Avi, but does fall a little bit short in terms of the cohesion and maybe even to the surprise factor. It's almost like, because comedies are so, like, when you see a comedy movie, so much of the enjoyment is predicated on the idea of surprise, and then usually comedy sequels are really bad. So this almost feels like the surprise is gone, and I know that she's going to put out something standworthy. So maybe because of that, there's a little bit less enjoyment because of that.
That makes sense.
I don't know. Hangover 2 was a raucous fun time. We all enjoyed that.
You're right. I take it back. 10 out of 10 bedrooms.
Okay. So my, man, wow. I gotta match Ezra and give it a 10 out of 10 complicated friends.
Hey.
It's a lot of fun. I've listened to this record so many times. It makes me very happy. Like, I guess, like, when you kind of dissect it a little further, I kind of feel the same way about as I like it less than Emotion, but I still think it's great. I still think it's a 10. Like, cause, like, ultimately, there's no perfect album. There's no album that truly is a 10 at the end of the day. I really don't think. But it's just more about personal enjoyment. It's more about personal, like, function of, like, this is a record I play all the time, regardless of if we're recording it for, like, content or the clicks or chasing that blue check mark. But, like, it's really just... it's really just like a lovely record. It's very sweet, very wholesome, very horny, just like right place, right time, really, ultimately. So 10 out of 10 complicated friends. So All right. Wow. So now we're going to get into our... I've been meaning to listen to that.
And I did.
Playlist. Yeah. So, all right. I'll go first this week. There's another record that I think is, like, really fantastic that came out earlier this, like, this literally the same day. And I listened to this record and then Emotion in the same run. So, like, it was, like, a two-hour run. I was just, like, having a jolly good time. So this song is, and, like, the song I wanted to do this week is, New Magic Wand by Tyler, the Creator. Click.
Sometimes you gotta close the door to open a window.
So, I think this record, Igor by Tyler, the Creator, is like one of the best breakup records, this year at least, and maybe not canonically ever, but like this year, it's one of the best breakup records, and this is the phrase in the breakup where like he's just like very, kind of exploring the same territory as like Carly's like, I'll be your girl, just like this jealousy of just like this... Yeah, just this jealousy, this anger, just like this person's in the way. And if this person would get out of the way, us two would be happy together. Just like a very like cathartic, angry song that like, but it's also like just the production is immaculate and really well done. And yeah, this record's like really great. I like it. So I think it's good.
Hey.
Yeah. So I am going to choose, a song that, like, I was kind of reminded of listening to this just because, like, it does have that kind of, like, chill, like, slightly, like, disco-y, funky sound. And it's also one that came out this year and is probably, like, it's one of the few that made it onto my, like, Spotify, like, Wrapped thing that wasn't, like something that we like listen to preparing for the podcast. So that shows you how much I listen to it, I guess. But I'm going to choose, Making Love by Sir Woman.
Wonderful. Wow. Click.
She's making love in the mind and she's not even. So, yeah, like I said, it's just kind of like a nice, like, laid back song. Like, the title is very much indicative of like what the song is in general. It's like Sir Woman is like a member of like Wild Child's, like, it's like her personal kind of endeavors, and like her solo stuff, and yeah, I think that that's really cool that they've kind of like hopped over to that. So
yeah.
Nice. Yeah. I'm going to pick Dreams Tonight by Always, which is spelled not with a W, wow, but two V's.
Love that song.
Click.
Rode here on the bus. Now you're one of us. It was magic hour.
That was something that came organically, not via algorithm, but via friend. Which, if you have friends that will make mixes for you and make you feel a little bit better,
aww,
about not being sweet, subject to the whims of Spotify, you know, invading you and your every thought, then I would fully recommend that. Have your friends make you a little playlist.
We should start doing that,
yeah,
for each
friends,
other, Andrew.
The original algorithm.
That's right.
Yeah. So thank you so much, Kevin. Like, this is like... really, like, truly, like, I don't think it could have gone better. Like, it was great.
Yeah, this is wonderful. Great... Thanks for having me, friends.
Yeah, thanks for being on the show. Wow. That's awesome to have you here and everything. Finally got a verified person, yeah, instead of all those other losers.
Yeah, you're so, like, you're incredibly articulate, incredibly empathetic, and just, like, I yeah, the thing, your pinned tweet about Mr. Rogers and, like, how it's kind of like that sacred space of, like, your podcast, like reaching out to people and like impacting people in like different ways is like very like, I feel like you do that too. You do that too. And we just want to thank you for that. So.
Oh, it's very sweet. Yeah. Thank you so much, friend.
Oh my God. I'm very happy right now.
Andrew, you're adorable.
Yeah. Thank you. So now we're going to end with a closing sentiment prepared by Kevin that he's going to put in the little chat box in Skype. 3, 2, 1.
If your friends really care,
they'll be there. Wow. Thank you so much, Kevin. Thank you so much, Ezra. It's very wholesome. You're wholesome. We're all small, adorable beans. Thank you so much, everyone. Have a good day.
Click.
Click.
Boom. You guys were very good hosts. I really appreciate it. I felt taken care of.